Microphone check. Is this thing really on? Yo, I've been getting a lot of emails like, what's going on? We miss you. I'm going through a withdrawal.
We took a couple of weeks off.
A lot of stuff. Life happens. It's a little crazy. I get into my busy season and it gets a little bananas for me, but we are back. And what are the topics that I wanted to discuss? Because I've been getting a lot of emails and calls from people that are talking about I'm having trouble deciding whether my child should go to an HBCU or a PWI. So some of my friends have children who are graduating.
PWI?
Yeah, predominantly white institution.
I didn't know they had a name.
Yeah. Sorry for those who don't know, predominantly white institution. And they are having issues of whether or not they should send their child to HBCU. And they asked my opinion because I've gone to both. You know, I went to a predominantly white high school in St. Francis Prep, which is in New York, Queens, New York. And there were not that many black people. But the black people that did come out of it have been miraculous. You know, DJ Envy, Gia Casey, and also Dia Sims, Dawn Flight Moore, like all these people.
All y'all went to the same high school?
All went to the same high school.
That's insane.
Yeah. So, I mean, we definitely... you know, they definitely, Harv Pierre, who I don't know if you guys know him from Bad Boy, but produced a lot of great black pioneers, you know, people who are doing their thing in the industry right now. But, you know, it was challenging when I went to high school, you know, being in a predominantly white high school and then making that transition to a predominantly black college was just like a culture shock for me to a certain extent.
I can imagine, yeah.
You know, because when you're in high school, you know, and I said, our stuff didn't really matter. I mean, we was probably about maybe 20 of us in a class, right?
Like 20 blacks in the entire senior class?
Yeah, it'll be like 20 blacks in like the entire senior class.
And it was predominantly white, or was it Asian, Indian?
It had some Asians and some Latinos.
Okay,
but I mean, majority white. You knew where all the black kids sat. They all sat together in the cafeteria in the same place.
Hmm. Okay.
There's a couple of them that, you know, that were may have intertwined with, but majority of people, we had a special area and it was really segregated. When I think back to it, right? It was really segregated. We all sat, everybody who was black sat in one area in the cafeteria, and that was like the black section. And then there was the Howard Beach section, because I went to school with Peter Gotti, John Gotti's son, you know, so... it was the Howard Beach section. So like our cafeteria was really segregated and where everyone kind of hung out and sat with each other.
So wait, a Howard Beach?
Howard Beach.
Howard Beach. What is that?
Howard Beach is the area in Queens.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they had their own section.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm learning like you guys are. Okay.
Everyone had their own section. I'm like, is Howard Beach? Yeah. Everyone had their own section. Right. So that's where everyone kind of sat and hung out with each other when we came in the morning time for you know, before class.
OK.
So anyway, it was a culture shock. And I didn't know my mother when we were looking at colleges. My mother had us looking at all types of different colleges, and Hampton kind of resonated with me. My uncle had given it its like stamp of approval because my mother had visited Howard and she had visited Spelman, and she just didn't like the surrounding areas.
Okay.
That Spelman and Howard had at that time, and she felt like, I'm paying all this money, I'm not going to send my daughter
to the hood.
You know what I mean? To the hood. So okay. She was like, you know, she was concerned about my safety. So when she saw Hampton, home by the sea, she was like, that's where she's going to go. And my father had reservations about it. He was just like, you're going to party, you know, like you're not going to study. My father's like, we were pulling up to unpack myself, you know, my dorm. And my father, you know, we're Guyanese, West Indian. He's like, this is a black school.
That's how he said it.
This is an all black school. He's like, you're not going to do no studying. You know, like you're going to be partying. And I was just like, no, I'm like, you know, because my uncle went to Princeton and they looked at him as like the, you know, he gave the stamp of approval, like Hampton's a really good college for her to go to. You know, they were fine with it. My mom was at least fine with it. But it was an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I know you could attest to that because we both went to Hampton. It was an amazing experience. I met a lot of lifelong friends. I was able to even, and I only spent 3 years at Hampton, and I end up going to Stony Brook for my last year, which is another predominantly white college institution in Stony Brook, New York, right? Which is in Long Island. And that was a culture shock for me, because I went from like this black college that had everything going on, is popping, everything you can think of, like school days or different worlds. I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
that was Hampton.
And that was Hampton. Mm-hmm. You, like, people were just fly, fashion shows, this, that. Like, it was just off the chain. And we had some memorable times. I mean, I met Pharrell down there. You know, he used to hang out with us like all the time. We used to be in the studio with them. Like, we met so many great people just going to Hampton. Mm-hmm. And then, like, to yank me out of that and go to Stony Brook, which I was back into the situation where all the black people were part of the Black Student Union. You know what I mean? Like, it was back to another culture shock, but then, even though that happened, that paved the way to what I was going to become in my career.
Okay.
You know, I met some really great people that opened my eyes to different things. And I started producing all of the shows, all of the fashion shows, pageants, whatever, because I bought my flair from Hampton to Stony Brook.
So at Hampton, were you producing things or no?
No, I was just part of it. I was in fashion shows. I was, okay. You know, I was in them. But then I took that flair and brought that to Stony Brook, and they had never seen, you know, the stuff that I was doing and incorporating. But then it also helped me, like, expand my career path, and I started interning at MSNBC, the Don Imus show, you know, because I met a woman, a Caucasian woman who was able to say, hey, you know, you should do this, you should do that, and open doors for me in a whole different realm.
Okay. So I think I'm following where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that had you have stayed at Hampton, you wouldn't have had the same opportunities?
No, I don't think I would have been an entertainment lawyer and that'd have been it. I'd have went to law school. Okay. I'd have tried to, you know, go into the entertainment law. I would, you know, still have been in the entertainment industry, but it wouldn't have, where I am now would have not have been if I had not left Hampton.
So I agree with you when I say that Hampton probably, I stayed there for the entire 4 years, mm-hmm. and it was the best 4 years of my entire life. Mm-hmm. And whenever I say that, my husband's like, what? But honestly, it was. It was carefree. It was fun. I still learned. I felt valued. I felt important. I learned about my culture. It was amazing. Similarly to you, I went to a predominantly white high school. We had more than 20 black people in our senior class, but I would say it was probably like 40 of us, okay. maybe. I won't say 40. I mean 40%. I don't mean.
Oh, I'm like this. What?
No,
really?
Not 40.
I went to.
I would say no. It's not even 40%. It probably was about 30%. But okay. Anyway.
Yeah.
We again was the same way. We all sat together. We all had the same friendships. The blacks played the sports, mm-hmm. and the, you know, it was that mm-hmm. type of thing. Mm-hmm. So when I got to Hampton, it was definitely a culture shock to be in an environment where everyone was black. Your teachers are black. Your dorm people are mm-hmm. like everyone was black, right? Mm-hmm. But it was a different kind of black. So growing up in Baltimore, most of the time when you're around a bunch of black people, and I hate to stereotype it this way, but they're not all of a certain stature or class. You know, it's mixed in. Some may be from the hood. Some may be a little middle class. It's all mixed in. At Hampton, literally, everyone was upper class black people. And it was the first time I ever understood that, wait a minute, there are a lot of us out there that don't just come from the hood. Right? Like, my roommate's dad was the mayor of the city where she was from, and she was the president of Jack and Jill. And, you know, it was really good for me to see other blacks doing things, right? But then, in addition to that, I felt like I built a lot of relationships that helped me build my careers. Mm-hmm. Versus, like, you having the opposite mm-hmm. reaction, thinking, oh, I probably would have just done this, but I took my spunk and my flair that I got from Hampton and utilized it in the white world. Yeah. Mine was the opposite. I would have been intimidated in the white world because I was used to always feeling like the less than. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they were always better. They were mm-hmm. came from better families, better situations. But being at Hampton taught me, no, just because you're black doesn't mean you're less than.
Yeah.
There are others of you that come from better.
And I think, and that's kind of what Hampton instilled in me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They instilled it that they instilled that pride. They instilled that confidence, right? Mm-hmm. I think maybe, I don't know, maybe if I had not gone to Hampton, if I had just gone to Stony Brook, I probably would have not went in there and been like, this is what, you know, I came in there like, oh,
you confident.
Listen, I came in there like, oh, y'all, man, what y'all doing? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's what we going to do. And I kind of took over when it came to that. And, but when I was in Hampton, I was kind of more of a contributor. You know what I mean? I wasn't the person planning, but I took that knowledge and took it and had that confidence when I went to a PWI to be like, this is what we're going to do. And this is how we're going to do it to the other, you know, ethnic groups that I was part of. Mm-hmm. But in Hampton, you know, I said it was a culture shock for me because I, coming from New York, you know, like you used to, everybody, what, who's, does anybody else exist? Right? And like, that's how, that's the kind of like the mind frame you go into it. And then when I went there, my roommate was like from South Carolina, you know, and then I met my friends from DC, and then DC had their swag, right? And then Chicago had their swag. And I met all these different black people from all over the country that just had a different kind of flair and swag and were confident from where they were from, you know? And I thought that was, that was like amazing. But I have lifelong friends from Hampton more than I have from Stony Brook. I don't think I really talk to anybody really from Stony Brook.
Really?
I really don't talk to anyone from Stony Brook. All of my friends are from Hampton.
My friend, I still have my same friends from Hampton too.
Yeah. It's like all of my friends, you would think like, I mean, but I spent, you know, 3 years there, but all of my, I can't, I'm like, oh yeah, Stony Brook. Oh, and it's crazy because when I go back to New York and I run into people who went to Stony Brook, they're like, hey, and I'm just looking at them like, where do I know you from? They're like, for real. I'm looking at them like, where do I know you from?
That's so funny because one of the things that I feel like is a big takeaway from Hampton was no matter what state I go to, I can be like, hey, so-and-so, I'm in town. What should I do? Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, come hang out with us. Mm-hmm. Because there were so many different, diverse individuals in Hampton and Texas. I got you. Wherever. I mean, Florida, Miami. Like, people always show love. And you don't even have to have been in the same class as that person. All you have to say is, I'm a Hamptonian. Yeah. And it's like, I got you.
No, I've gotten business because of that. You know what I mean? Because I've been in situations, because a lot of, I feel like, HBCU people are in different areas, and when they find out that you went here or there, you know what I mean, it's a certain type of camaraderie and love. And that's what people, that's what I was trying to tell my friend who you know, his daughter goes to a predominantly white high school, and she may go to a predominantly white college, and he was like trying to make the decision whether or not he should do college tours at black colleges or she should just go to, you know, visit the PWI schools that she wants to go to. And I told him, I said, you know, just like how the Ivy Leagues have their camaraderie when they, like, you know, you went to Harvard, you went to Cornell. You know what I mean? They feel like they're Ivy Leaguers, you know? So they kind of get that nod when they go into apply for jobs or wherever, is that they feel like, you know, we're part of this special group of folks. And that's how kind of HBCU people connect on a different level, where it's just like, where'd you go? Oh, you went to here, you went there. Especially like the Spelman, Morehouse, Hampton, and Howard folks, is they're really, really tight, you know, because they're like supposed to be the upper echelon of HBCUs. Huh. So
I don't know that I find that true.
Really? Who do you feel, who else do you put in there?
I only see Howard and Hampton. Quite honestly.
Well, what? Spelman and Morehouse? No, like, it's like, you know, yeah, Spelman and Morehouse.
They don't count to me.
What?
They don't count to me.
Yeah, they're kind of Trump, you know, they're up there. Yeah, they Trump.
Don't count.
Yeah.
they do not count. Yeah. Hampton is it.
So, wait, all the off the mic conversations, but Mike is saying that Hampton, he's trying to play us, but no. But no, what I'm saying is that, you know, these colleges, I said, when I was in Hampton, we would visit my boyfriend in my freshman year was at from Morehouse. So, you know, we would fly down there because Atlanta was popping. That's when Freak Nick was, you know what I mean? Probably the last year of Freak Nick. Yeah, it's like the last year of Freak Nick. I mean, you would just have to go down there because not like we were in the whole thing, but it's like we were on the outskirts because I would go see my boyfriend, you know, and be with him, but not like, I've never seen anything crazy because I never was part of that scene, but it was like everyone had to go down there because it was that time period, you know, so you'd be in the malls, things were popping, you know, it was just off the chain. But those are like the last years of Freaknik. I know before that it was probably even worse. But
they these say were Freaknik was amazing.
Yeah, it was like I think they had tried to like bring it back or something. You know what I mean? I think that's the time we went.
Woo! Mike over there reminiscing about Freaknik. You definitely used to go down there, huh? No, I never went to Freaknik, actually. It wasn't happening by the time I got to college. But I did do Bike Week in Myrtle Beach. And that was pretty wild, to say the least. It was actually more wild than I was used to. So I only did it 1 year.
What happened? I've never been to Bike Week.
Oh, my God. Bike Week is insane. Like, girls were on the back of bikes, naked, butt in the air. I mean, it was literally, like, a little too much for me. Like, people having sex in the balconies at the hotels.
Oh, my God.
I wasn't there. It was an experience to have. It was fun. We went to the beach and did all that type of thing. But I never felt the need to go back. However, Labor Day weekend on Virginia Beach was a different situation.
Yeah. I mean, those are good times. Like, that's some good memories right there. I mean, because that was when we were coming back into school. Mm-hmm. So everybody would go down to Virginia Beach.
All your friends would be like, yo, I'm coming to stay with you in your dorm. Yeah.
My boyfriend came down he cock blocked everything. But yeah, came down like, oh yeah, my freshman year, he was like, oh, I'm coming too. Where you going? I'm coming too.
Labor Day weekend.
He's like, you ain't going nowhere, baby. With us. No, but I mean, how is, you know, we have, you know, different time periods at Hampton, but I feel like we still share the same memories and the same meeting the same types of people, right?
Yes. For me, I felt like going to HBCU was so, I guess, life-changing, because when I was in high school, which again was a predominantly white high school, I would say we were probably 30-35% black. The other black students weren't per se like me, if that makes sense. They didn't necessarily come from the same type of household and parents had the same type of jobs. You know, we came from different situations. So I was always looked at as like the outcast. Oh, she talks too white, or she's too preppy, or she knows too much, or she thinks she's smart, that type of thing. So I felt pretty left out. Whereas when I got to Hampton, I would say almost everyone was like me. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't any different than the rest of them. So it was really good to see that there were other black people who were successful and were doing things and came from families that had names behind them. Mm-hmm. Like, my roommate was the president of Jack and Jill, and her dad was the mayor of the town where they were from, and things of that sort. So for me, it just felt really good to see, oh, you can do this. Oh, it's not just white people that succeed. Because I will say that growing up, I did have the mentality of, oh, white is better, black is less than, oh, I'm different from them, I can't necessarily do this or be as successful because they're born white and they have certain privileges. Then I got to Hampton and it was like, oh no, your dad is the president of what? He can do this, he can do that, and he's black? Oh, okay. If they can do it, so can I.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as I said, like, Hampton, when you go to Hampton and you have this the HBCU kind of stamp on you, right? Mm-hmm. Wherever you go, it's like you're from HBCU, right? And I said, and Morehouse, Spelman, Howard, I mean, those are considered kind of the upper echelons of the HBCUs.
I never felt that way.
I know you said you said. I don't know how you not feel like Spelman and Morehouse were up there.
I didn't. I always felt like Hampton was it. Either Hampton and maybe Howard.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm. We're like number third. we're number three. And when it comes to looking at endowments and all that kind of stuff, right? And all of the programs. Those were always, you know, when I go anywhere and I meet someone who's from HBCU, is this camaraderie, right? And that's the camaraderie that I was trying to explain to a friend of mine whose daughter goes to predominantly white high school, and she's trying to make her decision whether or not, you know, she's really just considering PWIs. And I said, you know, do you want to take your daughter to like a HBCU? I was like, do you understand, like, this is kind of like Wakanda when you go to HBCU, of having this certain black pride that that you get, that you, I don't say, I'm not saying that you don't necessarily get it in PWIs, because sometimes people do get in PWIs because Black people tend to band together in a different way because they are facing other issues, you know, within that institution.
Yeah, but it's not the same.
I know.
And I don't say it, I'm not saying it to say that it's just a horrible experience, no. But at white schools, it's cliquish.
Yeah.
At Black schools, everyone is Black. Yeah. I mean, so you literally, you don't feel in competition. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. Everyone is just there to get the same education. And honestly, I don't even remember ever having a white teacher. I had pretty much Black teachers, a few Indian.
And they value your opinion. They're concerned about your well-being.
They genuinely want to see you succeed. Yes, and I can't say that that's across the board. Yes. Obviously, everyone's different. But I felt for the most part, my teachers loved me and wanted to make sure that I succeeded.
Yeah. And I said, I went to both. So going to Stony Brook, I had no connection with my teachers at all. You know, I think I only had one relationship, I said, that kind of helped stem me becoming, you know, starting my career, this woman I met who's Dina, and she was one of like the first female directors, TV directors.
Okay.
And she kind of took me underneath her wing because she was new, and I was the only, one of the only people that she really showed interest in the TV programming that, you know, that she was trying to start. So I was the only one who showed up all the time, who was, you know, wanted to gain information from her. She set me up at an internship at MSNBC. So she was kind of, you know, and I think she only embraced me because she was new and I was new, and she wanted to, and I showed interest in what she was doing, and, mm-hmm. and some of the students did not show interest. So, you know, just saying that to say, but I just felt like I was in this big university and the teacher was talking like blah, 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 blah. And there was just no connection in comparison to when I was to Hampton, much smaller classrooms. And I could go and sit and have, you know, afternoon conversations with my teachers, and we would joke around, and you know, we would form mm-hmm. different types of relationships, mm-hmm. you know, comparison to if when I went to the PWI. But I mean, because I said you say you had this great experience, but you have a child, you have two kids, and your oldest goes to predominantly white institution. Mm-hmm. And how do you deal with that? You know, when you're so pro, you know, pro HBCU and pro Black. How does that work out with your child being in a PWI? You know, well.
This is not the first time I've actually been asked that question. So I don't know if it's considered a PWI when it's just lower school.
Yeah.
He's 7 at the moment. He's almost 8. He'll be 8 this weekend. But so let me start by saying that it was a difficult, and it was a debate between my husband and myself when he was entering kindergarten and we were trying to figure out where he was going to go, right? Mm-hmm. He felt like he wanted him around other people that looked and thought and dressed like him. Mm-hmm. I, on the other hand, felt like that's not realistic. It's very hard to find a decent school in our area that is predominantly Black, and we have to pretty much go with what we can for the moment, right? High school, we can deal with that. College, we can deal with that. Right now, elementary school, that's just not it's not an option that we have. However, I do feel like it slightly backfired on me because up until now, we didn't really talk about race. And I used to be very like, I don't want to talk about race. I don't want him to look at people as Black and white and this and that. I would even spell it. I would say that WHITE lady or that BLACK boy. I would never say the word. And then one day I realized I was doing him a disservice. He needed to understand you are Black, they are white. There is a difference. My son is very lazy, and I have to explain to him consistently, you don't have the ability to be lazy. That's just not something you were afforded. Absolutely. You have mm-hmm. to work 10 times harder just to be equal to them, to catch up. They were born already ahead of you, right? Like, some of his best friends are Jewish. When a little Jewish baby, when they do their brisk mm-hmm. and they get circumcised, I want to say like the minimum gift they're given is $1,000. So let's say you just invite 10 people, which you know you're inviting more than 10 people. That's already $10,000 that this baby is born with. We start in a hole. A lot of times our parents, they put the cable in our name, the BG&E credit already messed up before you're 5, right? So you're already starting at a deficit. You have to work 10 times harder to catch up, to be equal to where your best friend is at this point. So in our house, we are now very cognizant of exactly who we are. I've showed him pictures of white only water fountains and people getting hosed and things of that sort.
Did this happen because of, because I felt like everyone was kind of like in a kumbaya moment when Obama was in office. Mm-hmm. And then when Trump came to office, we kind of like pulled back the scab of the wound of America, you know, which is all of the racial inequalities and so forth.
So I'll say this. I do think that during the time of the election and the campaigning and all of that, it was a lot of conversations probably in homes, right? So because the children heard it in their homes and heard their parents talking about it, they brought it to school. So it did create debate amongst the kids, and then a lot of questions when he came back home. So his interest in black and white started then. However, my accepting of talking about it took a little longer before I got there. But yeah, he came home with a lot of questions. Questions that I don't know that I was fully ready to answer.
Like what?
Let me think. So one thing he asked me about was, why, okay, when the whole thing happened with the hombres and Trump saying that Mexicans were bad, really bad guys, and all of that, his school doesn't have really many Latinos there. Actually, I don't know that I've ever seen any. And so for Halloween, a little boy wore a costume to school that said "The Wall."
No.
Yes.
Wow.
And he had on like a sheet with his head through the sheet. So it looked like a poncho, kind of a cape. And all over it was lines drawn that looked like bricks. And in the front of it said "The Wall."
That is such an ignorant, but it's like such an adult costume, right?
So, let me tell you what happened. So the kids obviously don't catch on to that.
Yeah.
So they do a parade every year on Halloween morning. So the parents, as we're standing outside, we see this costume coming down towards us. We're all appalled. The kids are confused. So when he got home, he asked me about it and what it was. And I had to explain Donald Trump's ignorant statements about the wall, what it meant, and the division that it would cause between us and people of another culture. However, the school sent home a letter, basically an email, basically saying, oh, the little boy was mortified. He was in tears. It was taken out of context and he was being Pink Floyd. So apparently Pink Floyd was like a rock star back in the day. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Mike knows. And the name of his album was Pink Floyd's The Wall. This little boy is in lower school.
Side eye. What? That is some bullshit.
Pretty much, but that was a good cover up, right?
Oh my gosh. Oh yeah. My God. They need to chastise those parents for even putting their child up to that. You know, because of course he's going to be ridiculed and people are going to find that offensive. And then you're putting up your little 7-year-old kid for that?
The year before was, the election was in November. Halloween was right before. I would say a good 50% of the students came as Donald Trump. Wow. So they probably didn't think that it was going to be taken that badly. However, little did they know, it escalated.
Wow.
So again, that's an example of me having to have a conversation about race and helping them understand just because you aren't Hispanic doesn't mean that you shouldn't be sensitive to the fact that they shouldn't be teased either. Because if they came wearing a KKK costume, then you would be offended.
Yeah, that's our Black Lives Matter, right? They would have been like, oh my God. He has a Black Lives Matter shirt on.
He's Trayvon Martin.
Yeah, it's craziness. Anyway, are you against like Jack and Jill and those? I mean, because you said that you're trying to teach him at home, but are you against putting your kid in something like that to be around kids that kind of look like him?
That is something that for me came with maturity, because I remember being in high school and hating kids that were in Jack and Jill, like literally hating it. I felt like they were elitist. I felt like they thought they were better. And there, you know, there are certain qualifications to be in Jack and Jill, and you have to have a certain amount of money to be able to afford the dues and all of that. So if you couldn't afford it, then you were left out. And they kind of would isolate other blacks from their organization. However, now that I'm older, I feel like it's a good experience and opportunity to involve your children in, because it gives them the opportunity to see that there are professional Black people that do well, not just whites per se. But then in addition to that, I just think you have to instill in your child to not think that you're better. Don't treat someone else differently just because you're able to be in this organization and they aren't. And if you can find that good middle ground, then I think it's great. It's wonderful, because like I said, growing up, I did always feel like I was less than because I was Black. And it wasn't something that I was conscious of. It was just the way that we were trained. Oh, so-and-so's white, she's definitely smart. and that would be just the way we thought, but I don't want my children to think that way.
So what about intramural sports and all that stuff?
So sports are a little different for us because he's not per se into sports. If he were, that would be a easier outlet for us to be able to utilize for him to be around other little Black boys. You know, he could play football, basketball, soccer, whatever. However, that's not his thing. So with him being into painting and drawing and comics and all of that, again, that's another area that is pretty much dominated by the white culture. So what I try to do is have him engage with his godbrother and cousins and other people that have kids that are his age, little Black boys that we know. But even with that, he's still a little different. Like, for instance, I took him and my godson out to eat recently. And he says, hey, are we going to get an appetizer? And his godbrother says, well, what's an appetizer? And I laugh it off. And I'm like, oh, it's just, you know, the small meal before we order actual food. And he says, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So my godson says, oh, I want chicken fingers. And Carson says, well, I want calamari. And I'm like, oh, shoot. Okay. I got to roll this back in. And we still have to do a better job at taming the individual, for lack of better words.
Yeah, but... I get it. You know, you're in a tough position, but I think that when I was younger, I was able to, we only had one Black teacher, woman teacher in my school, and definitely no Black males. So are there any other Black male role models besides his dad that he interacts with? Or
no.
Who are like teachers or in leadership positions?
So his godfather is a Black male, but they don't per se spend an extreme amount of time together. My godson's father is not his godfather, but he is close to him. Well, they are occasionally together, but for the most part, no. Mm-hmm. It's a difficult thing to balance, because like, he spends time with my dad, mm-hmm. and with my husband's dad, so yes, he does have Black males in his life, but not outside of his family.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So there's no Black male teachers.
His school does not have any Black male teachers that I've ever seen. Definitely not in the lower school. I can't speak for the middle school or the upper school.
Yeah,
but definitely not in the lower school where he is. And again, if he was in sports, he would have a coach or something like that. Yeah. But he doesn't.
Well, I said it's crazy, because when I was in elementary school, I said we had one Black teacher, Miss Bernstein, and we definitely had no Black males. But we were a predominantly Black elementary school, but it was in a Jewish neighborhood. And that was kind of like by default, right? We were predominantly Black by default, because there were no Catholic, there wasn't an abundance of Catholic white families to attend the Catholic school.
Oh, okay.
So
everyone was Jewish.
Everyone
so
was
they were
Jewish.
Going to their Jewish schools.
Or they were able to go to the local high school, because the local high school was so good, right?
Okay.
You understand? Because it was in a really good neighborhood, so the local high school was really good, so they didn't have to pay for a Catholic school. But because I grew up in Far Rockaway, you know, till I was about 14 years old, because I grew up in Far Rockaway, we didn't have that many, you know, my parents, you know, did well for themselves, and they wanted me to have a quality education, and they felt the public schools, and I was different. As you said, like, I was different, especially being West Indian. We were just different. We just came from a different social class, and from the people who were in a predominantly Black public school, you know, in the, mm-hmm. in the public schools, period. So a lot of the kids who parents who could afford to have them go to Catholic school bust their kids out to this Catholic school in Cedarhurst, Long Island, right? Which was a predominantly Jewish neighborhood. But even, and they probably had about four white families that actually went to the school, and they were just considered like the creme de la creme. Like, all of the nuns and all, you know, the teachers kind of like catered to them. And we would go, and they were really well off. Their families were really well off, had big houses. They were Italian Catholic, and they had big houses, and we would go to their pools and have fun and do all these things, but those are the only people that we saw. Even though our parents did well, but they weren't, you know,
they weren't like them.
But they weren't like them. So they were the only people that we saw that was doing like super well. And the Jaguars, you know, like her mom would have a different Jaguar every Christmas, different color. Right. So, I mean, these are the images. And I remember my mom, when she was looking for me to go to high school, she was trying to have me go to a prep school. So we were visiting all of these prep schools in Connecticut and all over the place. And they asked my eighth grade teacher, homeroom teacher, to write a recommendation letter. You know, I have to have several recommendation letters. And my mom had hired a counselor to counsel us, you know, a consultant to let us know like which schools to apply for and so forth. And she would open the recommendation letter. And the recommendation letter from my elementary school teacher said that I was arrogant.
Elementary school.
She's like, Sanjay's really smart, but she's arrogant. Not confident. I was arrogant. That's what you put in a recommendation letter for a child to get into a prep school.
She didn't want you to get in.
That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? Yeah. And you don't, it's that underlying that underlying slyness that my white teacher put into my my recommendation letter. You know, like, okay, but we don't want her to do too well.
And you know what? That's funny, because it's not funny, actually, it's sad, but I think about, again, at Hampton being an HBCU, because your teachers look like you and you look like them, they had an invested interest in your success. If they saw you slacking off, oh, it wasn't, oh, well, that student don't care. Yeah. Oh, no, they would pull you up. Yeah. Hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
When I had to apply for internships, I didn't even per se have to go to them and say, hey, would you write me a recommendation letter? I had several teachers come to me and say, here's an internship I think you would be good at. I'm going to write your recommendation letter for you're going to apply. It could have been things that I had no interest in, but they saw something in me that I didn't see at 19, 20, you know, but that's the benefit of it. And that's why I personally would want to send my son to HBCU. Not because, oh, I feel like you'll do better or it's a better school. Not per se, because do I think that College Park is better than Hampton? Probably so.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the experience is different. The education is still good, but the investment that the teachers have in you is different. I don't even know who the president of College Park is, right? But at Hampton, President Harvey would walk around. He knew you. You knew him. He may not necessarily know your name, but he knew you were one of his students. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt like that was that sense of home, that home by the sea.
Yeah, I mean, I said I always go between the PWIs, and I mean, the HBCUs definitely have its strengths. You know, as I said, we say it's Wakanda. You know, you feel like you're in your own little world. Hampton does make you feel like you're in your own little world. It instills a certain bit of confidence in you that I think that I would have not probably developed that well in a PWI. But also, a PWI, what they do is that it also opens up your world to different opportunities that I don't know if Hampton would have allowed me to, you know, to open to. Like, it just did. It just certain. I would have not interned at MSNBC if I worked at, you know, if I stayed at Hampton.
You know, I think that everybody's situation is different, and what's meant for you and your path is ordained for you.
Yep.
So possibly, however, what I will say is majority of the people I knew at Hampton went on to do big things.
Yeah.
I mean, jobs at Procter & Gamble and BET and MTV. I mean, when you name the field, they got really good jobs in it. And it was connections sometimes, and most of the time we didn't have connections to the outside world.
Yeah.
It was your intelligence and that confidence that they instilled in us that sent you out to those interviews, and you came in and shined way more than those students from those white schools because you had that Hampton confidence that they taught you. I mean, they told us to be that way, and we didn't even know it. It was almost like they were brainwashing us since Ogden 101. Isn't that what it was called? University 101 in Ogden. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything was, you go to Hampton,
you're the best,
act like it.
Yeah, and I said, and I think that's what's really great, and I'm not, no shade to PWIs. They do have their, the benefits, you know, certain benefits that you do not get at Hampton, but you know, I guess coming from two HBCU people, I'm glad I had the best of both worlds. But I have to shine light on, I don't know if you're aware of what's going on at Hampton right now.
I'm not.
So there's a lot of the black colleges right now have been going through a whole bunch of crap. Morehouse and Hampton, particularly Hampton. Hampton has had like students protesting and walking out because there's been a lot of sexual harassment cases that have been happening, sexual assault cases that have been happening on the campus. And they feel like the campus, the administration is trying to sweep it underneath the rug because they don't want the bad publicity. So a lot of these people are getting away with, you know, these sexual assaults.
Are these students?
Yeah, these are students.
Okay.
These are students. The things are happening on campus, whether it be rape or some sexual assault or something is happening, and people are not being punished because they don't want the bad publicity, right? It's not being taken seriously enough. So a lot of people have been really upset. There have been walkouts. And then there's also been issues with the cafeteria, with rats and roaches.
Oh, God.
And,
the new cafeteria?
Yeah, and the food quality. And, you know, Hampton is just like, we have passed every single inspection and not have anything, you know, but kids are like taking pictures of things that they see. And posting it online, and it's like Dr. Harvey, you know, because they're upset that his daughter is in charge of a certain part that they just feel like they feel like it's like biased, you know, when it comes to making a decision what's best for the students and just doing it more what's best for the university. So it's been it's been huge. It's been all over. There's been articles written about it and all over social media, you know, just talking about all of the issues that's going on at Hampton.
That's disheartening. To speak on the sexual assault part of it, I feel like sexual assault is prevalent across all campuses.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why right now at HBCUs it is being highlighted so much. I don't know if we're just deciding to take a bigger stance on it than in previous times. I'm not sure. I would have to research it more. However, I just feel that, like I said, colleges across the board struggle with sexual assault. Now, as far as the cafeteria, listen, I'm not gonna lie. When we were there, the cafeteria was disgusting. It was gross. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was not the most clean and sanitary place. And unfortunately, again, where, yes, I'm pro-black and I do believe in black everything, but we don't always have the best business practices. So there are going to be areas where there are some loopholes and things get swept under the rug. So I am not surprised one bit that the cafeteria may be going a little under the radar. Like but we have a brand new all glass cafeteria, so that's pretty surprising.
Yeah, no, they have all kinds of pictures online. I'll just have to share the article with you. But even with Morehouse, there was like a whole issue with the president and then, you know, all the issues with the kids wearing the guys, the dress code, the policy and all that stuff that's you know, having impact on the student body. But I said there was an issues with the student body and the president, and I think they've rectified it now, but they fired one president and brought in another.
Oh,
so
wow.
it was a lot of scandal. And the kids trying to sue. It was huge. I mean, but there've been a lot of issues that have transpired over the last probably a couple of years. Between those schools especially. But I said nothing's perfect. You know, no one's perfect. That you're gonna have issues with registrar. I'm sure that has not changed.
Financially clear was the hardest process ever.
All of that stuff is not going to be a walk in the park.
And no.
They're not going to be trying to, you know, some of them is really difficult. They're not really going to be receptive to help you. I never really had that issue when I went to a PWI. You know, it was just like, okay, boom, boom, boom. And that was it.
Like, again, like I said, oftentimes we know that black businesses do not necessarily have the best business practices. However, I don't want that to deter people from going to HBCU. But in general, I just think it's a decision that you have to make for you and for your child. And you have to know your child well enough. I don't think that everyone can handle it.
Yeah.
For some people, it may be a bit much. And they're like, no, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
It just depends on you and how you were raised. But in general, across the board, I just think that it's very difficult raising black children in 2018 and so on. You know, you just have to find a healthy balance between culture and knowing who you are, but also being educated and classy, mm-hmm. for lack of better words, and just figuring it out. You know, you don't want your kids to be too much of either side.
Yeah.
And for us, I know it's definitely a struggle.
Mm-hmm. I know, because you express, you're like, oh, I think he's too, you know.
I think he's a little too white. Yeah. I think he's a little too soft.
Yeah, you want to. Yeah. Yeah, and I can imagine it being a balance, because you want to provide them with the best education.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you don't want them to feel so isolated from people that look like them.
Yes.
Or have different experiences than they do, you know, so.
That's why I really find it interesting that Diddy is doing it, like Black Excellence School, right? The school for Black boys, mm-hmm. or I'm not sure exactly what the name of it is, but I think stuff like that is really good. And if we could create more of those in our areas, obviously the waiting list would be ridiculous, but it would be nice to still be able to be around people that look like you, but the education still be of quality.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, that's just not really.
Yeah, and I said, and I've had a conversation, I said, with a friend of mine, I said, whose daughter has gone to predominantly white schools, and I asked him about Jack and Jill, and he was kind of turned off. He felt like he didn't have much he felt that they were elitist, and he didn't feel like he related to the parents. Mm-hmm. He didn't like what the parents talked about, making them feel like, you know, we're better than than this person because they're not making a certain amount of money, mm-hmm. or whatever. He just felt, but I said, but you know, I told him, and I tried to explain to him, I said, you think those people who are Ivy League schools, those people, those guys who come out and they already know their uncle works for the CEO of, you know, just say Google or whatever it may be, all of those people are part of organizations throughout their whole life.
Mm-hmm.
They form these relationships throughout their whole life, because as you progress in your career or wherever you go, you're going to see those same people.
Mm-hmm. Very right? true.
I was like, if you, and when those people who go to Harvard and they're generational Harvard folks, and they have grown up in the same neighborhood, they've joined the same clubs, then they all go to Harvard, and then they all graduate and they all have jobs and they help each other because they all have done the same thing. I said, that's what kind of Black people have tried to do, even though, you know, it has become a certain type of elitist thing, but, and discriminating against people who may not make as much money as they make. But I feel like if your child is in a predominantly white school, you need to put them in places for them to form relationships that could help them throughout the year, throughout their career, because this world is about relationships. At the end of the day, it's about relationships. You know, that's how people don't just sometimes there is like a, you know, whiz kid that comes in and just wows everyone. But majority of time, people are in different places and different opportunities because of relationships.
100% agree with you on that one, Sanja.
Yeah. So I said, you know, I felt like I needed to discuss this, because I said I was getting a lot of emails like, why don't you discuss why I'm having such a hard time making a decision for my child? And I said, like, you know, I am a proponent of HBCU, and I'm not anything against PWI. I know people who do have friendships with people who, you know, last who went to College Park, have been friends forever and whatever it is. I was like, but it's just a special kind of bond.
Yeah,
I mean, it's dope. It's like, you go anywhere across the country, hey, you're from Morgan, oh, you went to Hampton, oh, you went to Howard. It's just a special kind of love and camaraderie that you just can't find if you just went to College Park. I'm sorry.
I agree. If you went to College Park, you're just College Park. They don't care about the other schools like that. But I'm really interested in hearing feedback on this topic. If you went to HBCU, would you send your kids to HBCU, or would you prefer for them to get a more diverse experience? And then those of you that have younger kids like me, do your kids go to private school where they're the only Black? And if so, how do you combat that? Like, give me some advice. Help me out.
Yeah, you need to help Janine out, Mike. Because, I mean, I said, I think it is harder in Baltimore. And I said, I may be wrong, but because I don't have children, but I know in New York and I know in DC, there are different organizations and clubs besides Jack and Jill that you could be part of. Like, I know the City Club in DC has a huge Black population of, you know, parents who have joined. So then their kids are able to do different activities for each other and be around people that look like them. So let Janine know, because she's struggling out here.
I am. But guys, I will say I'm so happy to be back. It was a much needed break, but we definitely missed you guys. We're super tired. So P. Chris, give us some hype music to take us out on our way home.
Yummy. Real too. I ain't gonna stop. I see the... I ain't gonna stop. I mean...
We the best music!
I said the top of the Maybach. I said the top of...
Another one.
I said the top of the Maybach. I said the top of... I to the top of my Maybach. I to the top of my
DJ
Maybach.
DJ Khaled!
I said the top of the Maybach. I said the top of the Maybach. I see the top of the Maybach. I see the top of the Maybach. I see the top of the Maybach. Oh, I see the top of the Maybach. Oh, I see the top of the Maybach. Oh, I see the top of the Maybach. Oh,